Welcome back, gang. I'm in studio with Karen Oakham. Like I tell people, she's always the smartest person in the room.
Duh.
And with Jason and I in the room with you, that ain't saying much, but no, I'm kidding.
That was Billie Eilish, if you were wondering.
Yeah. That was Billie Eilish that we were listening to, and it actually joined us all three.
Yeah,
beat bopping the beat.
Yeah, get that bass.
Yas queen.
Yeah. We just had an election, a national election that just passed, and for the first time in a long time, the Democrats took the Kentucky governor's seat. Amazing.
Kentucky.
A state that Donald Trump carried by 30 points.
Mitch McConnell must be. You know,
I hope he's looking. He's looking very carefully at what happened in Kentucky.
The state legislature is still
Republican. Every other statewide office is Republican.
But
it's a warning shot.
Oh my heavens! I don't know what that's going to mean for Mitch McConnell though, because he's going to have to be bifurcated in a way. He's going to have to deal with his Republican state, the majority, and he's going to have to lead the Senate in an impeachment trial, which he says if the House passes impeachment, the Senate is constitutionally obligated to take up Trump's impeachment as a trial.
Right.
And he said he is constitutionally obligated to do that. What happens after that?
Well, remember who presides, though. It's not Mitch McConnell.
No.
It's the Chief Justice. John Roberts presides over the trial.
Yeah, I know. And he's kind of a confusing guy to read, to tell you the truth.
You know what? He gave a warning shot to Trump a year ago when Trump was talking about Obama judges. And it's
rare
for a justice of the Supreme Court to say anything. But he came out and he said there are no Obama judges or Bush judges.
Right.
There are just judges.
And he ruled on the ACA, on the Affordable Care Act as well.
And upholding it, yeah.
Yeah. I think he is concerned about his legacy and the institution of the court, which is good. And as one of the three parts of government, which Trump has been trying to negate. But, I think that Virginia turning blue, essentially,
completely blue,
is really, it's not a swing state.
Nope, no longer purple. It's now completely blue.
Right. You know what else is interesting for me is that California starts early voting on February 3rd, the same day as the Iowa caucuses. So for people who are ignoring California because, it's blue, it's going to go. California is going to have a say, I think, in the primary process. And I think that it's going to be really important. I do think that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are going to be dinged at the California Democratic Convention this coming weekend because they're saying, we've got other things to do. We're not coming. And those are the grassroots supporters who knock on doors, who do the grassroots money. I know that you think that, it's not as necessary to have that party backing, but I think that it's a big mistake. I mean, people start early voting on February 3rd.
I think in terms of perception, it can be a zing, but I think in today's politics, social media has become the new way to communicate to millions of people. And Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, they have hundreds of thousands of followers who follow them loyally. People are already lining up and they're already committed to Elizabeth or to Bernie or to Biden. Mm-hmm. And whatever the California Democratic Party does, it's not as weighty as it used to be. I think there was a time when the delegates would gather in a city and they'd do an endorsement and then that would be reported in the newspapers and then people would read it and then they'd form opinions. Mm-hmm. Now in the 24-hour news cycle with everybody got social media at their fingertips, I don't know if the parties hold the same kind of sway that they used to.
But think about not just the presidential, but think about the congressional elections because, for instance, the DCCC just opened an office in Irving, California, in order to protect those seats that the Southern California seats, Orange County, San Diego, that were flipped from red to blue. And I think not only protect, but hopefully and presumably push Omar Campa Najjar to defeat Duncan Hunter And Daryl Issa, who is also entering that race in the 50th district. And then we'll see whatever ramifications the Katie Hill resignation might have.
That particular seat, although I sent money to, what's his name again?
Kempa Najjar?
Yes, I sent him Omar money. Kempa I sent him money. I can't ever say his name. I sent him money. But the reality is that is a safe Republican seat.
No, you I don't think. I don't know. They're chewing each other up, those Republicans.
Yeah, I think Daryl Issa will knock the indicted felon off in the Republican primary, and
well,
then Daryl Issa holds
a
carpet, the seat.
He's a carpet. He's being a sort of a district carpetbagger.
Pete Knight was a carpetbagger. Mm. Pete Knight moved from Republican seat to Republican seat. You know, people who are hardcore ideologues, like if Nancy Pelosi moved to West L.A., I'd jump behind her in a second. Mm. It wouldn't matter to me that she carpetbagged in from San Francisco. So,
yeah, but Daryl Issa was not, you know, was not popular when he left Congress.
But he's rich.
He's rich.
He can self-fund
his
own campaign.
That's where the party comes in, because they'll get the boots on the ground.
Yeah. I think the boots on the ground is changing. And I say this as somebody who has to run for office every 4 years. Mm-hmm. The reality is that there was a time when people would really campaign door-to-door, precinct-to-precinct, phone call to phone call. Do you answer your phone when it comes up unidentified or unknown caller? I don't know about you. I don't. Mm-hmm. I only pick up the phone for people I recognize. Mm-hmm. And most people are now on iPhones. They're not on landlines any longer. Mm-hmm. There are still some who are. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's hard to phone bank voters.
You're talking about robocalls and phone banking.
Well, phone banking voters, or even going door to door. I mean, it's kind of quaint, you know, to think about it. But I think a lot of people get their information now from social media. For good, bad, or worse. I mean, I don't like it because I think social media can be full of false statements, inaccurate statements, misrepresentation, fraud, you know, by Russia or others trying to interfere in our elections. I don't like it. It doesn't have the time-tested quality of old-fashioned journalism where you'd actually have editors and fact-checkers checking stuff. Instead, it's just whatever people put out gets consumed.
Well, but that actually creates a vacuum and an opportunity, because not everybody is on social media. So there is still room, the older voters, for instance, where there's also an opportunity for corruption, we've discovered with, you know, people going in and let me help you fill out your ballot and I'll take it and mail it for you. But older voters, folks who do not have access to computers or iPhones or social media.
Becoming a smaller and smaller minority, I think. The world's changed.
Yeah.
The world has changed and changing. And I don't only think for the better, by the way. I kind of miss the days when I could rely on ABC, NBC, CBS, LA Times, New York Times to give me my data and information.
So what do you think about TV commercials and radio commercials?
Well, I think commercials, I think for the most part, people, when they know a commercial sponsored by a candidate, they expect some bias. Mm. But, you know, the problem, I think, with social media as a distribution channel, nobody fact checks it. Mm. You can make up anything about anyone.
Well, and now we have these deep fake videos.
Right.
Where you can literally make up stuff and put it on somebody's face.
And then
face.
It gets tweeted and retweeted, or it gets posted and reposted. And then if there's an error in it, or it's found out later to be false, well, then you send out a correction. That doesn't get republished or retweeted.
So, I mean, you're identifying actually a real crisis point for our democracy and our
In the information age. You know, we're having an information technology revolution, and democracy hasn't quite caught up, I think. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting times we live in. That's how a Donald Trump can get elected.
Got elected.
That is how it happens. And that's frightening to me. Yeah.
So what's the next stage? What's going to happen? How do you correct that?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I don't have the answer to that. All I know is
Come on, you're a politician.
I am a politician. 2020, I think, looking at what I'm looking at, I think there's a very good chance that Donald Trump will be taken out, either through impeachment, probably not by removal by the Senate, but probably by the voters in 2020. But to me, what's more critical is the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Senate is in Colorado, in Maine, in where are the other key states? Arizona, Sally McNally in Arizona, Cory Gardner in Colorado, Susan Collins in Maine. Mm-hmm. I think they're all vulnerable. And taking back the U.S. Senate to stop the Trump federal judges from being continued to be appointed by the next guy, whoever it could be, Pence or somebody else, is really critical too.
Well, and you see that McConnell has set up a time to just basically confirm.
Between November and January, they'll push through a whole lot. Yep. We got to take a break.
Okay.
We'll be right back. Thanks for tuning in, gang, here on Channel Q. Welcome back, gang. We are in studio with Karen Oakham, LGBT journalist of the ages.
Oh, God.
I don't even know.
Make me sound so old.
Well, 40 years of doing LGBT.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Well, no.
Yeah.
I think fewer than 40 years. 40 years as a journalist.
Yes, as a journalist. A long time.
Yeah, that's true.
I am kind of mesmerized by what's going to happen with the impeachment hearings next week.
Me too. I think that more people are going to tune in. It's not going to be a Robert Mueller sleep fest. I think it's going to be more of a civics lesson along the lines of OJ. You know, it's people are going to tune in and see what they can understand. And they're trying to see, you know, including Trump supporters, you know, he keeps saying he didn't do it. It was a perfect call, but they're, you know, I don't believe these people. I don't, but they're making sense somehow. You know, it could be a huge turning point.
I just worry because I think his people listen to Fox News exclusively.
Yes, but Fox News has been challenging.
Are there? See, I don't watch Fox News. Who is
Chris Wallace, for instance?
What's he doing?
Challenging Trump spokespeople who come on and spew out, you know, Kellyanne Conway, for instance, you know, no, that's not. And then Sam, what's his name, Shepard, you know, the gay guy who was on Fox, left.
There was a gay guy on Fox?
Yeah, you really don't watch Fox.
I really have nothing to do with Fox.
Yeah, there are some really old-fashioned journalists who are conservative bent, if you will, just as there are presumably liberal bent in MSNBC.
So. Well, if you were a true conservative, what's happening right now with Trumpism
would scare
the heck out
of
you.
Yeah, that's
cozying up to Russia, you know, screwing over the Ukraine. It's really, really
debt,
awful.
Debt. They used to be all about, you know, not having debt and national security, all of that. I mean, when Trump can get on and not even talk to any of his national security advisors and bully the new president of Ukraine.
Yep.
And then after a conversation, one phoner with the Turkish president, you know, Erdogan, and then they rush in and kill all these Kurds who've been our allies. Right. What conservative can support that?
Jarrett Hill has just joined us in studio, gang.
Yes.
Jarrett, welcome.
Yes, it's right.
Karen wanted to talk about Pete Buttigieg and black churches in South Carolina, but she wasn't comfortable doing it without having an African-American voice in the studio.
I see.
So you are now representing all of black America.
As I usually do. Yes.
I interviewed District Attorney Jackie Lacey about a number of things.
Okay.
But one of the things that she's running for re-election and facing a tough challenge, actually. But I opened the interview saying, what's your interpretation of South Carolina Representative Clyburn saying Pete Buttigieg is having a difficult time with black voters, older black voters in South Carolina because of his homosexuality?
Sure.
And I asked her actually what her take on that was, because Kamala said, wait a second, that's an old trope. And
absolutely.
Not, you know, and we ought not to buy into that. You cannot assign, you know, a specific community or a group of people that trope and say all people are like that.
Yeah.
So she actually sort of dodged the question. She said, I can't speak for all African Americans.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I kind of get that. But what's your view anyway? And so what's your view?
I think this is something that's been a big conversation since Proposition 8 here in California back in 2008. And when Proposition 8 I always mix up if it passed or if it failed. It passed.
It passed.
So gay marriage was you know, banned in the state after it had been allowed. They started this whole conversation about black voters and how they were homophobic and that black voters were the reason that this happened. And then, like, the data started to show, like, that wasn't actually true.
Well, hold on.
Controversial.
There are a number of black churches came out very, very strongly.
But black churches and black voters are not the same thing, right? So black churches, black pastors always have, like, really strong views on these things. But then, you know, the voters have kind of a mix of views on these things. I think black voters are not connecting with Pete Buttigieg because Pete Buttigieg hasn't really, like, connected. I don't think he's had a moment where he's really connected. I think he is excellent in interviews.
What about his Douglas plan?
I think Pete Buttigieg,
which is a Marshall plan for the black community.
I'm not familiar with all of the details of the Douglas plan, so I don't want to speak to that specifically. But I will say that with Pete Buttigieg, I think he interviews and speaks beautifully. I think he does such a fantastic job talking about, like, very specific topics and being able to speak to race and inequality in a way that shows that it's something that he's thought about. But I don't think enough people, A, are hearing him, or B, believing him. Because he's had that whole situation with his police chief in South Bend, Indiana, where he's the mayor. He's just not really connected. But to be fair, black voters were not geeked about Barack Obama when he started either, right? Like, people were connected with Hillary Clinton and had the familiarity of the Clinton name. And I think we have that familiarity with Joe Biden. I don't necessarily connect with Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden, his time has kind of come and gone. But I think that black voters are not, like, are not just going to, like, buy into Pete Buttigieg because he speaks well.
Well, and I think you make a really, really critical distinction between the black church and black voters.
Yeah.
Because what we saw during Prop 8, and I covered that up, you know, extensively, was that there was such an outpouring about how it's not necessarily about how gay people were bad. It was just the, you know, how sacred marriage is.
Yeah.
And you can't take that from us. But black voters, the next day after AP actually put out erroneous polling after exit polling, and that's what got everybody all humped up.
Sure.
And it was incorrect, and they, you know, adjusted it, but it didn't make any difference. But the black church still, you know, you have First AME and you have Holman here in Los Angeles that are very progressive in terms of fighting AIDS and being welcoming. But then you still have these black mega churches that are still saying that, you know, gay people are going to hell.
But I think it's also a really important distinction to make because there are plenty of people within those churches who don't believe that, right? I was in those churches my entire life, right? And obviously didn't believe that. So, well, and I remember coming out and being like, well, I do think that I'm awful because I'm gay and I've been praying about this and asking God to take it away. But there are plenty of people within the church that don't believe that. And so I think I say it's complicated because, like, the pastor can say XYZ from the pulpit, but the parishioner in the pews, you know, don't necessarily follow all of those things, right? Because oftentimes the pastor's not even following those things. I went to a mega church in Atlanta with the now dearly departed Eddie Long, who was walking in the front lines of, you know, family first and protect marriage and all that. And then also was, you know, having relationships with men, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, telling his parishioners not to do that. So I say that it's complicated, and I always try to make sure that I indicate, like, black voters are not a monolith, right? We always talk about black voters want X or black voters do X, but, like, black voters come from all over the country. They have all kinds of different backgrounds and look at these things differently. But I don't think that Pete Buttigieg has connected, and I don't know that he will. But again, Barack Obama was in the same place at this time. So
when Travis, we come back, gang, when we come back after commercial, more discussion about presidential politics here on Channel Q. Welcome back, gang. Closing remarks here. We're still talking presidential politics during the break. I got to tell you, Jarrett Hill and Karen Oakham, we're still going at it.
Sorry, we were going in on it. Yeah. There's some special content for the podcast or something.
Trump.
I love it. It's obviously presidential year. What's curious to me, this warning by Anonymous, you think people are going to take it as seriously as I take it? To me, it sounds like absolute chaos in the White House on a daily basis.
I just think that it's not surprising, right? right? Like, right. This is kind of the White House that we imagine that we have. And also, like, I always hear, like, we always get the government that we deserve. But I'm starting to have mixed feelings. When there was an op-ed in New York Times, I was like, oh, this is great. As a whole book now, I'm like, bro or sis, whomever, they, like, you're going to have to say who you are for me to be able to take this seriously. Yeah. It's starting to bother me. I know that the New York Times knows who this person is. I know the publisher knows who this person is. But, like, I need this person to step up and say who they are.
But I think the focus is, there's been so much focus on who is anonymous that diverts attention from what Anonymous is saying.
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
Remember, please, that it was Erdogan's call with Donald Trump, and right after that, Trump said, oh, we're pulling out, you know. And right after that, you had this massive, a massacre of the Kurds, who are our allies.
Yes.
So that whimsy that, oh, I'm going to do this because I'm almost a dictator, that's the substance of what Anonymous is talking about. Those are the results of what Anonymous is talking about. I don't care who Anonymous is. I care about what Anonymous is revealing.
Well, I think Anonymous's credibility comes in their identity, right? If it's Mick Mulvaney, the acting White House Chief of Staff, that's a very different book than if it's, you know, coming from a low-level staffer. They say it's a senior administration official.
Who could be one of the ones who are about to testify in the impeachment hearings. We don't
possibly
know.
It could be a cabinet official. Mm-hmm. It could be anyone. It could be Mike Pence. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
I doubt it. Right?
He's got his head so far up. What's his name?
I mean, he definitely does. But, like, think about how that, knowing that it's Mick Mulvaney or Mike Pence or a cabinet official, think about how that changes the discussion about this information rather than, oh, it's a senior advisor to the president. Like, that's a very different conversation. And so I think the credibility for whomever that person is comes in their identity.
Maybe they know that they're not a big enough person. But you can't stay stuck on that, because then you don't pay attention to what is happening as a result.
No. I completely, wholly agree with you on that. And I think the things that they're saying are alarming and horrifying and should be taken, like, with great concern. But I'm saying, I think en masse, I don't think enough people are going to pay attention to it because they have no idea who this person is.
This orange knucklehead, meanwhile, is telling his staff to treat each day at the White House like it's another episode of television. I mean, that is what he's telling his staff.
And he's already got another show lined up.
You got to think about, and he's trying to line up another show,
is
The Apprentice,
yes.
White House,
yep.
with the
Mark Burnett.
It's all show, but he's not realizing there are global consequences to this show.
What is the Apprentice White House? What does that mean? I've not heard this.
he's hiring and firing people like he's doing now.
Well, even that's interesting to me, right? Like, he came in as the you're fired president, but like never fire someone to their face. Right. Always had a, like, fires people by tweet.
He
sent Corey Lewandowski to fire the Attorney General of the United States. You know what I mean?
He's a coward.
And so it's like he's, you know, real big and bad on Twitter. You know what I mean? But, like, in person, he can't do that.
Well, he's all bluff on the global stage, you know, threatening Iran, threatening North Korea. And guess what? No one takes him seriously. Yeah. We are very vulnerable as a nation right now.
I feel
now.
Like the only time I ever saw him do anything that was really ballsy, that really kind of pissed me off, was at that first, was it G7, where he, like, push the guy out of the way before the photo. And I was like, what kind of school kid are you? You know what I mean?
He's a bully.
But like a really whack one.
Yeah.
Not really good at what he does.
Yeah,
like a good bully would be able to say something to your face. You know what I'm saying? So I'm so glad to get to talk about this here, because on my show later, it's Trump Free Friday, so we can't even talk about Donald Trump.
Allie, but we're getting it all out here on the sidebar.
But you were asking me about Kamala Harris,
yes.
And I think her new plan, she wants to extend the school day to 6 o'clock, and I think this has got to be strategy for trying to save the campaign, because we've heard all the reports about her, you know, firing a lot of staff and really focusing on Iowa. And I was saying to you, I believe that Kamala Harris's issue has been that her direction in this campaign has always been about, we have a guy in the White House who does X. Donald Trump has done Y. Blah, 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 Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump. And I don't think we've heard enough of what Kamala Harris wants to do for America.
Do you think it's a good plan, the school plan?
I like the idea. I don't think it's outrageous.
Tell me why.
I think it's going to be controversial to extend school to 6 o'clock for people. However, I think that we look at the way that parents work. If the typical parent works 9 to 5, a kid being in school from 8 to 3 just doesn't even work mathematically, right? But we're traditionally used to this schedule. So the idea is to extend the day, to keep kids in school a little bit longer. I think it'd be great because kids come home with homework that their parents can't do for them, mm-hmm. right? That they can't work with them on, and their siblings aren't going to help them. Keep them there in school, have an extended after-school situation. She wants to invest $5 million over a five-year period to each school that really wants to invest in this. And I think it really has some good ramifications for students, for parents. It helps people to be able to afford to not have to pay for daycare. Well, I think there's a lot of great aspects.
I gotta stop you both. We're out of time. Karen, Jarrett, we're out of time. It's Sidebar is ending. Jarrett and Allie coming up next, top of the hour. Stay tuned.
I'm gonna keep talking to her over here.
Okay. All right. Gang, we'll see you all next week here on Channel Q.